Heidi Cuevas, 42 years of old, age, October 4th, 2007, the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society 51st Annual Meeting, Baltimore, Maryland, and my relationship to Barrett is colleague.
Barrett Caldwell, I'm 45 years of age. Today is October 4th, 2007. We're at the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society 51st Annual Meeting in Baltimore, and my relationship to Heidi is colleague.
Barrett, for you today, the first thing that I would like to know is, what did you want to be when you grew up?
When I grew up, I wanted to be an astronaut. And that was all part of the television programs of the Apollo moonshots. And ironically, since today is the 50th anniversary of the launching of Sputnik, I feel like I've been a part of that energy and that enthusiasm for science and technology and the exploration of space my entire life.
So would you say this has been a childhood dream of yours?
A childhood dream that I guess I haven't quite awakened from or quite grown up from yet.
So that was back then. So how did you get into your line of work today? Because obviously you're not an astronaut today.
I'm not an astronaut yet. I think it was a somewhat complicated. It certainly wasn't a straight line. I went to undergraduate school at MIT to learn to do spaceflight engineering and design spacecraft for long-duration spaceflight. And while I was there, I met lots and lots of very good engineers who actually didn't understand very much about the humans that would be in the spacecraft. So I thought, I really need to learn more about humans and how to design for them and how to improve their performance and comfort and enable them to actually live and work well in space. And so I ended up spending the next set of my education studying psychology and hoping to understand how groups interacted in isolated and confined environments. And that combination led me to my current position, my current career track in industrial engineering, studying human factors engineering, or teaching human factors engineering, or researching it.
So you say you got your undergraduate degrees at MIT,
mm-hmm.
and then where did you pursue this understanding of group dynamics?
Well, while I was at MIT, I took a year abroad, I joke, at the University of Wisconsin. Came back and finished my degrees at MIT and then went to the University of California at Davis because there was a professor, Al Harrison, who was already known to be working as a psychologist with interest in space.
So you went from engineering to psychology?
From engineering to psychology and from East Coast to West Coast and as many other transitions as I could try to make at one time.
And now at Purdue, you're back in engineering again.
Mm-hmm. After I finished at California Davis, I got a job at the University of Wisconsin in industrial engineering and was there as a professor for 10 years and then moved to Purdue in 2000.
Okay. In light of this professional career, which I'm sure has been very full and successful, what would you describe as your earliest professional memory in terms of in the context of what you're doing now?
My earliest professional memory, I think, was as a sophomore in college that my work-study job was to do analysis for a NASA project. And I thought that I was just running computer programs and analyzing traces and calculating numbers. And one day I showed my project supervisor what I was doing and showed the principal investigator for the grant what I was doing. And they were both so excited that they offered me a ticket to fly to Goddard Space Flight Center in Baltimore, just outside of Baltimore, to present to NASA engineers, and I was an undergraduate. And it was at that point that I thought, this research stuff is pretty cool, and I think maybe I could do that. And other people think that I can do that, so I want to keep trying.
If you were in a room, sitting down having lunch with a group of students who said, I'd really like to do that too, what important lessons that you've learned would you share with them?
The first important lesson is that life rarely turns out exactly the way you planned.
So you're not exactly on the space shuttle right now, that is correct.
I'm not exactly on the space shuttle, but I'm also not exactly on the pathway that most of my colleagues as an undergraduate were. I'm not an engineer working in a particular company, having done a particular technical subsystem. I get to research a lot of different things, everything from spaceflight to healthcare to who knows what else is going to come up next. But be open to opportunities, I think, is the most important thing.
And flexible.
Be very flexible. Recognize what's going on around you. I like to describe it as scanning the environment. Be aware outside of your own area. Be aware outside of your own expectations.
I know this is going to be very difficult for you because there's many instances of this, I'm sure, having known you as long as I have. But if someone were to put you on the spot and ask you, what accomplishment are you most proudest of thus far in your career?
What accomplishment am I most proud of?
Professionally speaking.
Professionally. So I can't talk about my kids yet. I think professionally, I'm most proud of probably two projects that I did. One is to actually do a research project with flight controllers at Mission Control in Houston. And to be able to work with them and talk to them and be seen as someone who could come in and help them with technology design for the next generation of spacecraft, that was tremendously thrilling. And that was a real rush to be able to actually say, yes, I have to go to work at Mission Control today. And that was fun. I think the other one is a little bit more down to earth, as it were, but in one sense having at least as much impact and effect is a research paper we did quite a few years ago now, where we were looking at the design of technologies for state government. And I was trying very, very hard to do good research. And one of the reviewers of the paper said, more than good research, this is a great explanation and set of recommendations for practice. And most practitioners would just take what you have written and use it to design technology. And I think that's, as an engineer, the best I can hope for is to have my work be able to directly improve and influence the way people interact with technologies and systems.
So if someone were to turn that around on me and say, what do you think is the accomplishment that Barrett's most proudest of? Would it be a fair and accurate summary to say that you have had impact?
I always want to have impact, and
in your lifetime.
Well, yes. Ideally, I would like to have impact in my lifetime. It's cool to have a unit named after you, but that usually doesn't happen while you're still alive. That would be ultimately validating, but it's nice to be able to see the effect of my work while I'm around to enjoy it.
And in a domain that you're passionate about, such as spaceflight.
I do want to help people do better with the world around them.
Going back to my first question about what you wanted to be when you grew up, thinking back on that goal, how has your career been different than what you had imagined, and yet how has it been the same?
When I was growing up, the idea of being an astronaut was you were absolutely perfect and studied very hard and did extremely well. And the astronauts just were the joke was they were straight arrows. And I sort of internalized that sense of you had to go out and make all the right choices at every step along the way. And that's how you got to achieve that sort of goal. And since then I've learned that my life, I don't think life in general really works out that way. There are many more twists and turns. And one of the very nice things is I've gotten to work with and talk to a number of astronauts. And they've all said the same thing, that their life isn't as linear as they expected. They had a goal and they wanted to achieve it, but almost never does it turn out exactly the way you plan. And in one sense, I have as much connection with the space program as a six-year-old kid could imagine having connection with the space program.
Yes, if I do remember, there was a certain kid that flew to Orlando this summer.
Yes, I was invited to be a visitor and sit in the reserve seating for the shuttle launch with Barbara Morgan, educator astronaut, because of my work with NASA and education and outreach programs for the state of Indiana through NASA.
Oh yes, tell me a little bit more about that. How is that? In what capacity?
Well,
what is your role?
Since 2002, I've been director of the Indiana Space Grant Consortium, which is a NASA program devoted in each state. So there's a Space Grant Consortium in all states and the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico to promote education, workforce development, outreach, and K-12 development and of interest in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics disciplines. And to me, that is a program that I took on simply because I wanted to be an astronaut when I was a little kid. And
now you're going to help a whole bunch of other little kids grow up to be astronauts.
That's exactly the point. I want to be able to give back that enthusiasm.
Have impact.
Have an opportunity.
Opportunity for impact. Along that line, then, how would you like to be best remembered? Given the various things you do, you're a professor at Purdue University, a competent researcher, obviously chair of the Technical Program Committee here at the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society at their annual meeting, director of the NASA Indiana Space Grant Consortium, proud father of two wonderful children, all these many hats that you wear, how would you like to be best remembered? If I were to read your autobiography or your biography one day.
I want to be someone who left a mark, who did something worth paying attention to in the future, leaving a legacy that people respected and recognized and said that had value. There's a joke that my kids and I had when they were very little, and one of the Star Trek shows was on, and in the captain's private quarters there were, dog-eared ancient books. And one of the the jokes that my kids said that they were going to send to the television studio a book and have the name Caldwell on the spine of the book as one of the books that Captain Picard wanted to read in the 25th century.
Caldwell's Handbook of Spaceflight Operations?
That sounds like a really good title, and I think I'm going to start working on that one soon.
Do you need an editor?
I'm always looking for good help.
Going back to our purpose for actually being here in Baltimore, how do you see, since you are the chair of the Technical Program Committee, which really has a tremendous impact on the society itself, mm-hmm. how do you see our society's role, the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society's role, in impacting?
I think that the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society is really at a crossroads. This is our 50th anniversary, and if you look at the pictures of the folks who were involved in the first meetings, they were research scientists, they were academics, they were working on a particular set of military problems. We see much more now in this year's meeting. We've got people talking about virtual reality simulators and rehabilitation and work in intensive care units, and much more interest in practitioners, much more interest in how can we use our work to help people here in offices, in developing countries, people all over the world with a whole range of interactions with work and technology. And so I think one of the real focus areas of the society now is how do we grow ourselves, not for the sake of growth, but how do we expand our capability to have an impact, to deliver services and products and solutions that help a growing number of people in a growing number of areas, so that in future years people are upset if the society hasn't had a role, that they're angry if products aren't well designed, if they refuse to buy technologies that don't
have... That doesn't have the HFES seal of approval?
That's one joke that we tell, yeah, we need an ergonomics laboratory seal of approval. But I think the model is that this is so important to everything you do that human factors and ergonomics should be a part of everything you do.
Okay. Going back to Barrett for a moment, in the professional context, of course, if you could do anything now, what would it be? And more importantly, why that?
If I could do anything at all?
No, if there was no limitations, no barriers, resources were not an issue, what would you do?
I would still... make every effort to leave the planet for a week on the space station would definitely satisfy me.
And why?
Because I've wanted to see the Earth from space since I was six, because I don't want to leave those things undone, because that has been a passion, and people should feed their passions.
I agree. It is important to have our passions and to keep believing in ourselves and following our dreams. How do you see human factors playing a role in passions such as space tourism then?
Ooh, I wasn't expecting that question. When you look at solitary explorers, they're willing to go out and have extreme experiences, and they are they think of all the risks that they take on as part of that experience. And you see these people who are you know, they come back with frostbite. They come back with broken limbs, and they come back with, you know, suffering, and they're still thrilled that they got the opportunity to experience that. Space tourism, I don't think is necessarily going to be like that. During my dissertation, I got to work in a national park, which has a lot to do with tourism, but it's also about natural protection. And when I was there, I noticed a lot of people, you know, enjoyed the image of this rough outdoors world. But I remember, and this is an actual event. One day, we were in the ranger station, and one of the tourists came back from a hike and complained that there were rocks and twigs on the path. And I said, yes, that's what happens in a wilderness park. So space tourism is a fascinating and wonderful opportunity. But I still think that you know, people who are willing to spend that kind of money for space tourism are still going to want to have a very nice experience and still make it back for their dinner reservations.
Yes.
And
don't want it to be a one-way ticket.
No one-way tickets, and preferably they don't want to mess up their elegant clothes or their you know, physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the real challenge for space tourism is to how to give people a very intense, literally out of this world experience,
and, or help them realize a dream,
and make it still something that they can feel comfortable doing. Because I'm willing to go spend a week on the space station and not assume that it'll go well.
Mm-hmm.
Space tourism as a business will have to be able to demonstrate that people can buy those tickets and have it go well.
So we've talked about your childhood dreams, we've talked about your education and your current career. What does your future hold?
That's a question that the older I get, the less able I am to answer that. If you had asked me 10 years ago what my future would hold, I would have been able to tell you exactly what I thought my future would hold. As it turns out, none of that is true. None of the expectations I had 10 years ago are actually operating right now. So in terms of the future, I'd like to consider leadership in the university environment. I think it's wonderful to be able to bring groups of researchers and scientists and students together to work on complex and fascinating problems. You can't do that as a single research professor anymore. I like to consider, you know, working with companies, working with other groups that are designing new technologies. I'd like to see, you know, some of the work that we're doing in healthcare help save patient lives. Still want to work with the space program.
Mm-hmm.
That part will never go away. So what the future will hold is, if I am fortunate and I am well blessed, I will be able to have enough time to get more of the things that are in my head out of my head and into the world so that people can appreciate and use them.
Now, Barrett, in addition to being a colleague, you have also assumed a mentor role in my professional life. And as your mentee, I would like to ask you, since I have you captured and you can't run away, are there any words of wisdom that you'd like to pass along to me?
Interesting how you snuck that one in. One of the things that I've learned is that patience and finding the right time, the right place to maximize the effect for your effort is critical. I made a lot of mistakes when I was younger that I thought that just working harder and making more noise and pushing harder and knocking my head harder against the brick wall was going to solve whatever injustice I saw out there. Since then, I've learned, and taking Tai Chi is a great metaphor for allowing the energy of what is going on around you and the centering of yourself to be used for the best effect. And I'll try not to sound like too much of an engineer, but maximize the ratio of output to input, and I have no fears that you will continue to be passionate about your desires and your interests, but passion balanced, passion centered is critical. So not focusing on all the external elements, but focusing on the center of where you are is what enables that passion to have its best effect.
Most of my questions this morning have been focused on your professional objectives and interest in career, both past, current, and future. But if I may, I'd like to ask a personal question.
Okay.
What would you say you have learned about me in the several years that we have worked together, collaborated together? I've served as your mentee, assisted you with the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society, worked together on projects and papers that you believe will help me to succeed. And then what areas would you like to see me improve upon?
I think one of the things that I've learned and watched you learn is the ability to be aware of oneself and to develop a language and a description that allows one to understand one's own motivations. And I remember watching someone who had lots and lots of energy and didn't quite know how to focus it or exactly what to call it. And I think what's been scary and yet powerful has been watching you learn how to take care of yourself and value yourself as a priority for your own life, to recognize how important it is to make sure that you were well fed in order to support all the things that you want to do. Because it doesn't do any good to continue to burn yourself up and burn yourself up for the benefit of others. There will always be other needs and other people asking you for things. And yet, you can't achieve that if you lose sight of yourself.
So again, balance.
Balance and awareness and tempered passion. You've taught me, but I also seem to have to remind you that perfection is probably not available, but excellence is its own reward.
Distinguish for me there. I'm sure many would think that they would be the same. What is the difference between perfection and excellence?
Growing up, I mean, the focus on trying to be perfect was that every choice was the correct choice, and I always had all the possible information, and I made no mistakes. and there was never any regret, and everything was the absolute best that it could possibly be. And I don't really think that that's possible. And more importantly, we try to focus a lot on things that are shiny and they look like they are absolutely flawless and without any sort of drop off or imperfection. So they have absolutely no visible problems with them. But I, as you know, I collect antiques.
Wabi-sabi.
From the 1930s, history of technology, so I'm interested in some things that are earlier. And I think there's nothing more beautiful to me than something that's well used. And I mean that in both senses, that you see the evidence of it being used.
And used well.
And used to good effect. And so these things don't look perfect. They don't look brand new. But they do look and feel like they have been designed and implemented to have a lasting effect.
And have value.
And have a value that long past the things that were shiny and are now ground in the dust.
And then relating that to excellence?
Excellence is the ability to do well over the long term. Again, to not to be too engineering, but to maintain long-term stability, to be robust, to be able to function well in a variety of conditions, to be adaptable to any errors that you do make, to be able to recover from those errors, to be able to adapt to unexpected changes. Excellence is about being adaptive and being resilient.
Ah, resilient. Yes, very important, because life is uncertain.
Yes, I've found that out for better or for worse, that since the world isn't constant and my experiences aren't constant, the best I can do is to adapt well, respond well, be creative in how I move forward.
So if I had to summarize your wisdom, your advice to me as I continued with my professional development, is to continue striving for excellence rather than perfection.
Yes, strive for excellence. Attend to the internals as well as the externals. Remember what the passion is and recognize how best to feed that and keep that warm and safe and alive.
In the couple of minutes that we have left, I will allow you the opportunity. Do you have any questions for me?
Well, I do have a couple of questions.
But we only have a couple of minutes.
Yes,
I planned that on purpose.
You are, you know, very competent, very energetic, very excitable. What happens when you are in those few quiet moments where you dream about what you best want for yourself, not for anyone else, for yourself?
That is a difficult question to answer, because when I begin to think about what it is I want for myself, it is integrally connected with the impact that I would like to have. Much like you, I do want to leave a lasting legacy and have impact. But for me, what I'm most passionate about is fostering the professional development of our next generation of human factors professionals. And that is what excites me. That is what moves me. That is what humbles me. When I see that my energy, when well channeled, leads to an effect where I can realize that goal.
Do you have an idea of how you can do that, or what the future will hold in your doing that?
Much like you, my life didn't exactly turn out the way I wanted it to. When I went back to graduate school, it was to be an academic. And long story short, I ended up in industry. But I'm hoping that with professional organizations such as the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society, that I can have ways to have even greater impact than I would in academe, because now I can have nationwide impact through the different programs that the society allows me to implement. That's one thing I'm very proud of. I'm very happy of being a member of the society, because I come up with these crazy ideas and they say, well, that's Heidi, let's let her run with it. And so they support me. And so I'm hoping that that's where my legacy will be, through the society, the opportunities that it offers me to allow me to reach out even more students than I would as a professor at a single university.
Well, be careful that you will have those opportunities, and I know that you will find it hard to back down from them.
I know I can count on your support, so I will do well.
Thanks.
Thank you, Barrett.
Thank you, Heidi.